Hey, Alex.
Hi, John.
You know what I hate?
I don't know. What do you hate?
I hate that there's way too many remakes these days and that not all of them are done by bizarro German directors like Werner Herzog.
Yeah, it kind of sounds like we've been watching Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans. This movie is, that's what I got so far.
Yeah. Well, I believe I mentioned on the last episode that I had seen this almost 10 years ago when it first came out. And yeah, I just now have formulated an opinion about it. And that opinion is, hell yeah.
I'm glad you're going that way. No, I'm not.
Yeah.
I don't know what to think because as I'm watching this last night, I realized, one, I have seen this movie before, but I'd forgotten large swaths of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think I watched this in a some kind of social gathering scenario where it was very much not the main thing
right.
to be paying attention to. But there are parts where it's a tremendously long 2 hours for me. And then I kind of loved it, but then I also really hate. Like I was a whirling dervish of not knowing what the fuck to do.
Mm-hmm.
And coming into the recording, like, I was thinking, oh man, I hate this movie. And then like, now that I'm like, no, I kind of like it. Like it hit me in all the weird ways.
Yeah. It's a bizarre one. So back up to the original Bad Lieutenant, made in 1992 by director Abel Ferrara. It was starring Harvey Keitel and which I watched fairly recently. And it's basically 90 minutes of Harvey Keitel getting high and making faces at the camera.
Exactly. Also demanding, show me how you suck a guy's cock.
Yeah.
And where are you guys going? Going for the kick club?
So it's a great movie. It's absolutely fantastic. One of my favorite parts of it is
Harvey Keitel's cock.
Is absolutely my second favorite part is there's a part where he is shooting up in a kitchen, and he also has a Diet Coke, and he just sets it down on a stove. So it's like the label is facing the camera, and it's like this guy getting high is brought to you by Diet Coke.
Yeah,
which is the best product placement I've ever seen.
He was in very good shape.
Yeah, no, he was toit.
Thanks to the fine people at Diet Coke.
Yes, but so that one came out with like a cult classic, and for some reason they decided to remake it. Written by this guy that was a writer for NYPD Blue, William M. Finkelstein. I don't know how it's pronounced, and I think this is one of those examples like the Limey. Steven Soderbergh directed The Limey, and it was written by this guy. I'm forgetting his name right now. They're the ones that infamously in DVD commentary track, it's this guy. I think his name's Lem Dobbs. The whole commentary track is him yelling at Steven Soderbergh for screwing up his script.
Oh, really?
But in reality, Steven Soderbergh like took this just this – it was fine. It was this workable whatever script that and elevated it to something else. And I feel like Herzog here did that with this script. Like if you imagine this as a straight – the story as it is, just told just straight – how abysmal this movie would be. Like, it's just this, ugh, who gives a shit? But it's so bizarre in so many different ways.
Yeah.
That I think it really brings it to this other level. And Abel Ferrara hated this movie. I don't think he ever saw it, but when it came out, he was like, everyone who made this movie should go to hell and die in a fire. And Werner Herzog was like, I've never seen the original and I have no idea who you are.
That's my favorite quote from Werner Herzog.
Yeah.
And I was tempted to have both of us do our impression of Paul F. Tompkins' impression of
Werner
Herzog.
Yeah, basically is what it would be.
This entire...
Werner Herzog is in my top three of voices I wish I could just have. Like that would be like the way Mystique from the X-Men could just take on other forms.
Mm.
I wish I could just automatically go into not an impression of... but just do a Werner Herzog voice.
Weird enough, much like Mystique from the X-Men, I wish I could look like Werner Herzog.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That would be great, too. He's
And then get shot by Klaus Kinski.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans. It is a remake-ish, not a remake.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
not a sequel.
Yeah, it's completely different. In fact, Werner Herzog actually fought the title. And he says the title's probably a mistake, but what can you do? It's what they wanted.
So what did Werner show up for? Like what did he sign?
This movie, he just didn't realize, like when he found out it was a remake or something, was just like, I don't want to. Because he's not a guy that was, you know, there's not a Aguirre Wrath of God 2 or a Fitzcarraldo 2.
But I mean, so he got a script, and it was called Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans.
Well, yeah, in theory, yeah. And I don't know if that was the if I don't know if that was the full title, if it was just Bad Lieutenant, and he was like, what if we called it Port of Call, New Orleans?
How does he not know that Bad Lieutenant was a movie?
Because he's German, man. Yeah, but he lives that go-go German lifestyle. He has no idea about anything.
I guess so.
Just awesome techno music and chocolate.
Yeah.
That's it.
We're having einen good time.
Yeah.
Von in Discotheque. The movie opens. Well, I don't even know if it opens, but let's just start. What's up with the fucking lizards?
So yeah, no, there's a lot of time spent in this movie, just detailing close-ups of various lizards. It starts with a snake, which is not technically a lizard, but
it's lizardy.
It's lizard enough.
Lizard like, adjacent.
It's this snake skating around on the surface of some water in a prison that is flooding.
Oh, and yeah, that is the opening bit. Yeah, it's him and Val Kilmer.
Yeah, and then it basically ends its journey in the cell with this inmate that is still in this slowly flooding prison, because it's happening in New Orleans when Katrina is going on.
Yeah, which I also felt was kind of insulting.
Well, so initially this movie was supposed to be as a remake of Bad Lieutenant. It was supposed to be in New York, but I guess budgetary concerns helped move it there, and also Werner Herzog wanted to make it more – really wanted to make New Orleans be another character in the movie, for if I want to trot out that old tired thing. But there are several movies at the time that were shot there. The one that immediately comes to mind is Killing Them Softly, which was a film version of a George V. Higgins novel that is basically supposed to take place in like Boston, but it is in New Orleans. Yeah, they decided to make the negligence and the dilapidation really at the forefront of their movies. And so I guess that's why they want to do it here. And in some ways it makes more sense for how he gets away with doing some of the stuff that he does.
Yeah. But here's one of my problems with it being New Orleans. One, it's kind of insulting being after Katrina. It seems like kind of, taking advantage of the situation or whatever, however you want to word it. This is the least New Orleans movie. Is there a single person with a Nolans accent in this fucking film? It could be Baltimore, like it's not,
yeah,
it's,
but I mean, in if you've ever seen Tremé,
yeah,
there's not a whole lot of that in there either.
Well, then I would, if this was John and Alex hate Tremé, I would bring up the same point of,
and they do why
yeah, because like, why are you setting something in New Orleans? Yeah. And like, one of the famous things about New Orleans is the what's that called, the Creole accent,
yeah.
And there's none of that. Like, right. Nicolas Cage is, I would actually say this is the least southern sounding Nicolas Cage has ever sounded in his movie. Even when he's not supposed to be from the South, he usually has a bit of a drawl or a twang to his voice.
Well, his accent,
he doesn't at all.
His accent in this movie is interesting because I feel it really kicks in about, I don't want to say like accent isn't Southern accent, but just whatever he's doing to his voice,
yeah,
kicks in about halfway through the movie. I feel like he gets this weird, more nasally intonation, or maybe that's just when I notice it. But it felt like about halfway through, it's like, was he doing this voice the whole time?
I thought what he was doing was a drug voice.
Uh-huh.
Like, I thought that was his voice of, I'm on a lot of drugs.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, and that could be what it is, because he does go through different stages of being completely strung out in this movie.
Yeah.
Which, oddly prescient now in the midst of an opioid crisis. So he at the beginning, this flooded prison cell, he and Val Kilmer show up, who's weirdly understated for being Val Kilmer.
I was so confused by this, because it's Val Kilmer and Nicolas Cage, which should be the most dynamic batshit that's ever happened. I mean, it should be up there with The Island of Dr. Moreau with him and Brando.
Yeah.
But it's just, yeah, Val Kilmer's just kind of playing, he's just being an actor and like playing it straight. It was really weird.
Which I realize now, because I was about to make a reference to Batman Forever, and I would love to see a Batman movie with the two of them, not as Batman and Robin, but them just both being Batman.
That'd be so great.
Like, there's just two Batmen just running around. Or like the Always and Sunny in Philadelphia when they're doing the Lethal Weapon remake and they just switch roles inexplicably halfway through. That, where it's like some scenes it's Val Kilmer, some scenes it's Nicolas Cage.
I
would watch that.
I would never not watch that. Yeah. Like that would be the last thing I see. And not in like a suicide way, in a, nope, everything's been perfect now. I'm just going to forever watch this.
Movies have been perfected. Walk away.
Yep.
He and Val Kilmer show up because some other idiot cop didn't fill the proper paperwork out to get some prisoner extradited. But so they're razzing this prisoner.
Well, they're taking bets on how long it's going to take him to drown.
And then Nicolas Cage is like, you think I'm going to jump in that nasty water to save you? I'm wearing super fancy underwear.
I'm wearing Swiss underwear. This costs $55 a pair.
Yeah. But then he acquiesces, like, you know what? This guy's going to die.
Well, let's stop here. Because this is an important part of his character. And mm-hmm. when I say that, there's a question mark on both the beginning and the end. And then the word character is in italics.
Mm-hmm.
The guy does the Stations of the Cross. He crosses himself.
Uh-huh.
And then Nicolas Cage decides to save him. Was that important? Now, this is going to be one of the few times I ask that. But every time we talk about a scene, assume I've asked the question, was that important after every sentence? Because I don't know. But for some reason, he decides to do a hero jump into water.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know if it's one of those things, if that was, because it's not really a religious element throughout any of the rest of the movie. In the original Bad Lieutenant, oh goodness, is there a lot of Catholic guilt kind of permeating the whole thing. But in this, it didn't read so much as Catholic guilt as much as just, this guy's really going to die. I should just do something. Like, and it was just a moment to show you that the prisoner has sort of given up and but was just turning to God.
Not to talk about things too out of order. But this movie has no character arc.
No, well, it's
other than if maybe he was a faithful man in the beginning, and this movie is just documenting a downfall that doesn't get punished. Because there's no arc here.
I think it is a character study in that, like, I feel like the plot is somewhat secondary to the whole thing, and it's just sort of about this guy and like this the trouble he kind of gets in and then kind of gets out of. Much like a Taxi Driver. Where at the end of Taxi Driver, you get the sense that, like, oh shit, nothing's actually changed. And I think this attempted to do something similar, where, again, the original Bad Lieutenant, he gets sort of a comeuppance in that he gets murdered at the end. Like, he does a good deed, but then he gets murdered at the end.
Oh, does he die at the end of
yeah,
that?
Yeah, yeah. Like, just like these guys pull up and are like, hey, cop, and then just shoot him.
Oh, wow. I don't remember that at all. And I've seen that movie like multiple times. Oh, right. Whatever.
For a 30-year-old movie.
Yeah, the movie but, came in fucking 92. We're good.
This one, it's more redemptive. Maybe. He goes through this whole trials and tribulations, and maybe he's not learned anything.
Yeah. And let me not continue my thing of railing against anybody with, like, spinal or leg injuries on this show. So they're on this catwalk looking down at the cell.
Mm-hmm.
There has to be steps somewhere. The choice for him to jump off the catwalk, thereby injuring his back, is a strange one. Because he's, as far as we know, isn't on drugs yet.
Right. But it's also just, hey, that's his character, man. He goes for it.
Not in the rest of the movie, isn't.
He goes for it. Like, he does things his own way. He's a loose cannon.
Not particularly, no. That's not true. He got addicted to drugs.
Yeah.
And then did things to get drugs.
Yeah, but no, but I'm saying, like, but his police work.
Yeah.
Is a lot of, like, that shouldn't happen. And whether or not that's only fueled by drugs or the drugs are, like, fueling a part of him that is already there.
Yeah, that's fine.
It helps you show that he's already kind of a reckless weirdo. But no, I agree. Like, I mean, you're not going to take steps down. I mean, it's like getting into a pool. You know, you could take the steps down and you just jump in, and he just mistimed his jump because he jumps in to save the guy. And then it's just, like, cuts to black. Then sometime later, he's talking to a doctor, and the doctor's like, your spine is fucked, bro.
Yeah, there's just a lot of problems there because, like, I swear they actually showed steps on the right. And then beyond that, he's jumping into, like, 4 feet of water from, what, 10 feet up?
Yeah.
How bad, like, how much of a wuss-ass spine do you have, Nick Cage?
Sometimes you just make a bad jump. I mean, maybe there was a table under the water that he didn't see, or, you know.
He works there. He should know where that table is.
Yeah.
Where's that table at?
I don't know. It's Katrina. Maybe the table got blown down.
Oh. The thing is, I always remember Katrina, always forget about the waves.
Right, yeah. Oof. Spinal injury sounding pretty good right now compared to this.
Hey, if you want me to start yelling scoop feet again, I will.
No, I do not.
All right. Fair enough. Would you like me to talk about the fact that inexplicably they say Swiss underwear? Swiss cotton underwear.
Yeah.
Is that a thing?
It's just make it sound fancy that he's wearing Swiss, like, if it was just like I'm wearing fancy cotton underwear. Yeah, whatever. This guy's wearing imported underwear.
But I mean, isn't there already a famous other country cotton called Egyptian cotton, which is, like, famous for
sure.
being expensive?
I didn't know that. I don't know that.
Really? Like Egyptian cotton bed sheets?
No.
They're like, oh man, they're like 1,000 thread count.
I sleep in a drawer. Oh, I have no idea.
So anyway, he jumps in, he breaks his back, and then he goes to his doctor, and his doctor's like, well, yeah, your back's pretty fucked there, bro. You're going to have to take these pills. And he's like, well, how long? He's like, forever.
Until they invent a bacchiotomy.
Yeah. There was I actually did kind of like that back and forth. No, it's just, this is, yeah, your back's just like this now.
Yeah. And so they give him Vicodin to take, I believe is what he gives him.
I think that was the first one. Yeah, correct.
Yeah. And then he wins the some medal of honor.
Yeah, medal of I become a lieutenant.
Yeah, well, he became a lieutenant and then like won like an Iron Cross or something for his valor.
Yeah, I think it was. And saving Iron Cross, that guy. Yeah. It was definitely something from the Reich.
At this whole ceremony. And then the movie basically like fast forwards to him.
Yeah, they do it 6 months later and it shows so Nicolas Cage, you know, when you can just see the decision he made,
mm-hmm.
Right shoulder down means my back hurts.
Yeah.
Oh, it's and great. It is so fucking distracting in every goddamn
scene. I actually found it very physically uncomfortable to watch, particularly at the beginning. Cause he's just, everything he's doing, he's like when he's at the crime scene and he's unveiling the bodies, yeah. He has to like squat down at an awkward angle and do it. And just like the whole way he stands, I just found myself sort of like correcting my sitting posture.
That's correct. And it's in that way it was successful. But what a weird way to show your back hurts by doing the Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Yeah, it's basically like Richard III.
Yeah, because I just focus on any time you've heard an interview with Nicolas Cage. He's like, oh, well, in this one, I chose to do it this way. Or like, I remember in one of the Ghost Rider ones, he went, well, in this movie, I wanted to really channel Snake. And all the moods were snake-like movements. So I kept thinking snake, snake, snake in every scene. Uh-huh. And one, you're like, yeah, you go, Nicolas Cage. But this movie, I just see him at home talking to one of his loved ones. Like, okay, yeah, so anyway, I bought a Superman number one. And I'm thinking right shoulder down equals back hurt.
Uh-huh.
Gold.
Yeah.
Let's get on this. Werner, we're doing some things.
It was great.
Yeah, it was really, really distracting. So his shoulder hurts, and then we kind of we jump into the first big murder scene that sets the whole plot, for lack of a better word, into motion. There's a Senegalese family that has been viciously gunned down in their house, and including a mom and I think a father and multiple children.
Mm-hmm.
One of the children, you know what he has, John?
Hmm.
Pet fish.
Oh.
And that little boy. He was quite a poet.
Yes, he was.
I want to tell you about my friend.
No, please do.
My friend is a fish.
Mm.
He live in my room. His fin is a cloud. He see me when I sleep. It's the work of the great Babacar Mbembele.
Yes.
Which I'm very sure I pronounced all that right.
Yep.
It's fish, right?
Yeah.
Okay. It's pretty brutal. Like they show up murdered children, and then they go, oh, here, that murdered child, here's all of the hopes and dreams he had. Yeah. And then he's like a little writer kid. And then it's like, come on, dude, you're studying this in post-Katrina. You're murdering poet children. This is, I get that you're going for dark, but this is a little fucking heavy-handed in your dark this early into a Nicolas Cage movie.
But I think it's also like with everything that he does in his sort of like drug-addled spiral, that something being this awful is what it would take for him to pursue it. You know what I mean? Like it's gotta be so bad if he's going to give a shit. Cause he's at this point, like he is not only addicted to Vicodin, but he's also just spiraled on to just taking whatever drugs he can get to mitigate pain or whatever. Like I said, it's very interesting now in the midst of an opioid crisis to actually see that kind of played out.
Shortly after that, we see his kind of first really showing how bad his kind of addiction is, that drugstore scene.
Yeah, so he's got to go pick up a prescription, and this woman pharmacist at the place is on the phone, just talking to a friend of hers, instead of helping him, and he loses his mind about it, and then just like makes a big scene, just goes into the back and to find his prescription, pays for it, but she's just like, you can't come back here. What are you doing? Doesn't flash her badge till like towards the end. But just basically,
yeah. She calls security.
Security, and then like he shows him his badge, and he's like, "Get the fuck out of my way!" And
yeah, police emergency. So, and this is where he and I don't know if we've talked about this on the show before, but I've definitely something that I've been vaguely obsessed with for a long time. When was it decided that everybody in movies and TV have to chew their pills instead of swallowing them like a fucking person?
Yeah, I don't know. That's where, and it's always like just plop them in the hand, dry swallow.
But I mean, it's the chewing part because pills taste really gross.
Yes, they do.
And I can't imagine that chewing them is going to take, like, it's going to get that in your system that much quicker. Or maybe it will. I don't know. I've never, I've not done a lot of opioids in my life.
I still do that to my Flintstone vitamins, but I don't know if that actually helps Fred get into my system faster.
Well, interestingly enough, you're missing a word from that title because it's Flintstone's chewable vitamin.
Oh, yeah. See, I guess that's true.
That's what that word means.
Oh.
Yeah. And also, right here, we get introduced to his into Frankie, his mm-hmm. prostitute girlfriend.
Yes, played by Ava Mendez.
Ava Mendez is a bottomlessly awful actress.
I don't know. She's fine. She was in a ton of stuff. And then just, I feel like she stopped being in things.
Oh, I just meant this movie. She's fucking awful.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's not a whole lot for her to do.
But when she does it, oh, it's shit. And that's saying something. When she,
I don't know. It didn't bother me.
There was one scene, and this is way later in the movie, where he's in his little playhouse on his father's old house. Mm-hmm. And he's doing the whole pirate gimmick.
Yeah.
And she's trying to, like, she's like stepped in front of him and like looking out in wide-eyed wonder. And it just, have you ever seen like where people take like fake headshots to look like I'm a really shitty actor? She's got like the fake headshot of like, this is what a bad actor's face would look like if they tried to do wonderment. It is just the most,
was just watching him during that scene. So I didn't really pay attention.
Yeah. She just kept distracted. Like any scene she's in is just like, what the fuck? Because at first I thought it was an actor choice of, oh, she's a strung out, you know, prostitute lady. So, you know, obviously she's acting a little, you know, she's a little off. But then as the movie progressed, and especially towards the end there, where she's kind of a little cleaner, it's just, oh no, she's just awful in this. Hmm. And I don't know her as an actress that well. I just know she's very attractive.
Worked for me. I didn't have any complaints.
Well, on your next rewatch, just peel your eyes from the sultry,
the golden visage of Nicolas Cage. You start to get a taste of what he sort of devolved into, where there's issues with him. You already see him doing drugs and trying to scam. Stealing stuff from the evidence locker, who the guy running the evidence room, Michael Shannon, a very long-haired Michael Shannon, in what I have always felt like what Michael Shannon is probably really like, as his character, I think Munt was his character's name.
It's Munt, which is such a great name.
And he's just like, oh man, I don't know, like just this kind of like sheepish coward weirdo, because Nicolas Cage has something on his character. So that's why he's able to steal stuff from the evidence locker.
I think he'd stolen money or something previously.
Yeah. But it's just like the way, I don't know, I was excited to see Michael Shannon be something other than a just glowering psychopath. So maybe that's why I just completely loved him in a tiny role. He's barely in this, but I really liked him.
I won't go too far into this because I don't want to, like, you know, it's two in a row, but I don't like Michael Shannon. I know this is like a weird, a lot of people respect him as an actor. It just, and this is very different from the thing I'm saying about that lady. Uh-huh. There's something about him that just, I never believe him in roles for some reason.
Oh, no, I can completely understand that. Like, that's the way I feel about Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise is always Tom Cruise in a movie. He's never whatever character he's supposed to be playing.
Yeah, it's probably a good association. I think it's just Michael Shannon bothers me a little bit more than a Tom Cruise or a Nicolas Cage or something like that is that he's more in like kind of quality movies.
Sure.
Where it's like, what are you doing ruining a good movie with your dumb face? Like, you could have hired a good actor.
And then right, like Adrian Brody or something? Like, that's somewhat how I feel about Adrian Brody.
Yeah, very much like that, where it's just, somebody better. There's quality actors out there. Around here, we get the kind of, Nicolas Cage does this kind of fake pullover thing. He waits outside of, the Gator Club for these rich, attractive people to leave and, you know, waiting for them to, when they leave, to notice that they have drugs on them. So he pulls them over and he's like, hey, do you match a description? So he's basically trying to shake them down to get drugs. And it is very much like the first Bad Lieutenant, where he pulls over those girls and jerks off on the side of his car. Mm-hmm. Is Nicolas Cage gets the drugs from these people. And this is this really subtle performance from Nicolas Cage here, where he goes, you got the rock? You got the rock? Give me some of that kibble. You got the kibble? It is... It's the Nicolas Cage that I wish it was. And what was the car movie we watched with him?
Gone in 60 Seconds.
Yes, this is what I wanted in Gone in 60 Seconds, is this level of Nick Cage.
Yeah.
And he gets bigger as the movie goes on. But that scene was gorgeous. Because then he fucks the girlfriend in front of
basically he pulls these people over and they end up having drugs on the two of them. And he's going to bust them. The guy's like, well, can you just not, like, can I just go to jail on weekends? And ends up sort of like really kind of throwing himself at the girl a little bit. And the girl sort of responds, but essentially it's a rape because there's a, you know, power structure at play.
Wait, not to argue that, but was he throwing himself at her or was she throwing herself at him to try to get out of it? There was a weird, I couldn't read that scene very well.
No, it was
Nicolas Cage.
It was really nothing, but it's basically like, you know, like it seemed like a survival mode.
Oh no,
thing,
totally,
you know?
Rapey. I just couldn't figure out what the dynamic was. Was this a survival thing from her? Was this was that what he was going for? Or was he, because I read it as he just wanted some crack or he wanted their drugs. And then she misread the scene again, not victim blaming here, But she thought, oh, I need to get out of this. She's thinking, oh, this is a real cop. I need to get out of this situation.
Yeah.
I'm going to woo him using crack in my vagina. Where he was just, I just wanted your drugs.
And, right.
Oh, well, bonus then, points.
But I think what changes with that is when the dude kind of tries to escape and he pulls a gun on him.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
And then
yeah.
is like, no, you're going to watch me do this.
Well, he's already invested in it. I mean, at that point, you might as well, you know.
Yeah.
you know.
Well, and it was at this point in the movie that I went, hey, I don't think this lieutenant is very good. And then I sat back smugly for the rest of the movie and was very proud of myself for getting the conceit of the movie.
You know, I just got that now.
Yeah, he's not. He's a bad lieutenant. This is also worth noting that he, along with the drugs, takes the crack pipe they were using. Chekhov's crack pipe.
Yeah.
That'll show up later.
I didn't pick up that was the lucky
That's the lucky crack
pipe. Oh, wow. That's awesome. Yeah. I wish I wasn't serious when I said that's awesome, but I was. So this is where he starts getting into like the investigation of the family that got murdered.
Yeah.
Which starts at him going to the funeral of said family.
Yes.
This is one of my favorite, what I thought would be my favorite part of the movie. The first time he interrogates old people.
Oh, yes.
Where he's trying to find, I don't remember, how did he find out about them? Do we know?
I feel like it was because like that, the kid was a witness. And oh, the only lead they had was his grandmother.
That's right. So he's trying to find the kid. So he talks to her and he's just strong arming this like poor old black lady grandma. And she's like the kind of caretaker of this kind of snooty white lady grandma.
Yeah.
And it is just an awkward ass scene. I'm like, this is great. Nicolas Cage is like just being an asshole to these old people. Little did I know what was going to happen later in the movie.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
But
beautiful.
My favorite part about that is, oh, he's just interrogating her. And then the grandson just comes in through the window.
Yeah.
I mean, he was just hiding outside the whole time. But I just like that. Like, oh, this is handy. I'm just going to show up now. And that kid, I was unsurprised to learn, his last name was Whitaker. Because he looks like Forrest Whitaker.
Oh, is that
Whitaker? Same like droopy eye thing? And yeah, no,
yeah, he does have a Whitakerian face to him. So he, the delivery kid who was in the house when the murder happened, his name is Daryl, because he's kind of a major character for a bit of the film. He explains that the guy behind it is Big Fate, who is played by, I believe, Exhibit.
Exhibit.
From, and that's the Pimp My Car guy, right?
Yes, or the dysfunctional member of the Alcoholics family of rappers.
Yeah, so Big Fate is turned out to be, he's going to be our big bad for the crime.
Mm-hmm.
And then we meet with my favorite That Guy actor. Mr. Brad Dourif is in this movie as his bookie.
Yeah, which one of my favorite things, so I was watching this on Amazon, and Amazon has that X-ray thing, and I paused it because I had to use the restroom. And it was paused, and it was like trivia. Brad Dourif is mimicking the speech patterns of Timothy Treadwell, the guy from Grizzly Man. No, he's not. He's being Brad Dourif. Like, there was nothing nothing not Brad Dourif about that performance.
Yeah, that doesn't seem very Timothy Treadwell.
So, come on, IMDb. Yeah, there's nothing about it. It's just Brad Dourif being Brad Dourif. And he's great.
Huh.
Because Nicolas Cage, is, as well as wasting his life on drugs, is also an inveterate gambler. And Brad Dourif is his bookie.
Brad Dourif says, "Hey, can you fix this ticket that I got? That my
kid got. His daughter's got a bunch of speeding tickets."
And Nicolas Cage is like, "Yeah, no problem." And he goes to the scene of an accident where a car has hit an alligator.
Yes.
There's a lot going on here. One,
hell
what
yes.
was with that alligator arm that was just kind of waving up and down?
Yeah, because it was like it was still alive. It was its death throes.
That was. The way it was waving looked like one of those inflatable weird things in front of car dealerships.
I'm Allie Alligator. Drive safe, everybody. Goodbye.
It is. Yeah, that was really fucking awkward. And there's another part of that where there's another alligator kind of looking at the scene.
Well,
and
the scene ends with just cam. Yeah, where it's like it changes to, and this happens again later. It changes to like obviously. Like an HD cam. Like this was shot on film and then, we have this HD stuff too because it looks very much more like video. Right by the alligator's head and like focusing on the eye. And it's just this alligator that's at the side of the road and like, oh man, that looks crazy. And then just kind of wanders off a little bit.
It's
and
so
then,
fucking weird.
Oh, it's great.
But that's the thing. It's like, is this meaning? Like, is it, well, these cops are the reptiles or it's like.
Or there's danger still lurking. Like even though this alligator's dead, there's another one right here.
Yeah, there's a lot of this movie I don't get the best of.
Yeah.
But, and this also introduces Can you say her name, the lady from
Feruza
the craft?
Feruza Balk.
Thank you.
Yeah, because he tries to go to the some other lieutenant or some higher up at the scene of the accident. It's like, hey, my buddy, he needs these traffic tickets going away. And the guy's like, fuck you. Someone just died. This is a scene of an accident. And you're trying to squeeze me to do something illegal and get rid of these parking tickets. But then Feruza Balk shows up, who apparently they've had a thing. And she's like, why don't you just come to me? I'll make that happen for you.
Yeah. And she's just adorable as the day is long. Mm. I find her very attractive, except I can't say her name without saying the name of the girl from Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. So I'll just have you say it.
Yeah, Veruca Salt. Yeah. No, it's very similar.
Yeah. I've been doing that since I found out who she was in like Return to Oz or whatever. So this is like a 30-something year relationship I've had with not being able to say her name properly.
I refuse to learn anything.
Well, it's not even that. I'll write it down. It's just my brain doesn't translate that.
I guess like I can't spell the word separate, even though I've done that for years and years and years. First time at it, never going to spell it right.
it's there. So he's like makes a date with the lady from Feruza Balk.
Yeah.
And he's the dumbest human in the universe because she's like full out in like black lingerie and like big like sexy boots. And he tries to shake her down to get her to steal pills from the evidence
room. He's all conked out on heroin.
Yeah, I know. But there's not enough heroin in the world that I'm not going to get one up for that. Like I'm not like a Lothario or like really someone that ever has sex or ever will again, but Jesus Christ, she's attractive. And that's just
not as hot as heroin.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, maybe I should start doing heroin and then I won't feel so lonely anymore.
Yeah. So we'll put up a poll. Should Alex do heroin? Vote yay or nay.
Yeah, that's what would be really fun about that is three episodes later, there's a solo show with John. And it's just, yeah, it turns out he wasn't joking.
Yeah. He was really good at it.
Anyway, so he doesn't have sex with her because he wants to get pills from her being the
in the evidence locker of where she's at. This whole, like the first hour of this movie really is just setting up that, boy, he's a bad lieutenant.
Yeah.
Like there's some nascent plot stuff happening, but it's a lot of just time spent with Nicolas Cage showing what a piece of shit Nicolas Cage is.
Well, if I can correct you, the first like 5 minutes is showing up how he's a bad sergeant.
Right. And then the first 55 minutes of the film.
Because I'm a big proponent of hierarchy, mm-hmm. and I need to have the right terms used.
He was a crummy sergeant and moved up to bad lieutenant. At some point, he goes to visit his father, who is a recovering alcoholic and lives with Jennifer Coolidge, who's like I know from Best in Show and other comedies, and I guess was Stifler's mom in American Pie. I've never seen it.
Yeah.
She was playing a very different role than I've seen her play before in this, and she was great. So she's like his stepmom, and she's just – all she does is drink beer all day. And all his dad does is go to AA meetings and then just hang around and wait for the next AA meeting basically. And he was a former cop. They live in this big like rundown palatial plantation thing. And he spent some time there. Gets a dog, like his dad's like, I can't take care of this dog. Will you take care of the dog?
Yeah, and then the dog he drops the dog off with Frankie.
With Eva Mendez, yeah. I was just going to say, is that the first time he shakes down one of her Johns?
I think so. I think that's our second meeting with her, and the first time it was just him and her. So
yeah.
He shakes down one of her Johns.
Yeah, for cocaine.
Yeah.
Like flexes being a cop, and then like strong arms him out of his cocaine and out the door. And then they laugh and giggle and then do cocaine.
Yeah. So around this time, they have a SWAT team set up, hiding out at a house where they think one of the suspects for the murders are.
Well, there's two of Big Fate's, associates, like his captains, Midget and G. And my favorite thing is that every time Nicolas Cage says the name, street name G, he laughs about what a stupid street name that is.
I enjoyed that greatly, and it annoyed me how much I enjoyed it.
Yeah, because it happens a bunch.
Yep. And Nicolas Cage doesn't miss one of them.
Yeah.
And there's this weird scene there where there's a couple of iguana that they're not iguana, according to.
Yeah, they're in his apartment? Because he says on my coffee table. Like he makes reference to on my whatever it is they're on.
I think he's just saying that like the
where they're at. Yeah, that's kind of what I thought. So I'm like, that's really convenient movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, so they're all staged up to the SWAT thing or like this surveillance thing, and Val Kilmer's there and he walks in and he's like, why are there iguana on like my coffee table? And he's like, there's no iguana. What are you talking about? It's like, there's iguana right here. And there are two iguanas, although technically one of them is a bearded lizard. And
oh, well, now I finally understand the movie.
Well, yeah, but then Val Kilmer, then they just go like, moving on. Like, they just accept that he thinks there's an iguana there.
Well, he slaps one.
Well, he references it. Like he slaps at it. He doesn't make contact.
But okay. Is there a lizard on the table?
Absolutely not.
Both of those, because there's an iguana in multiple other scenes that he imagines.
Yeah.
This is the first time a bearded dragon is involved in it.
I think it's just because that's what they got.
Okay. Because I was thinking is this an apartment that just happened to have a bearded dragon there? Or whatever.
I don't think it was Val Kilmer being pedantic. You could argue that it was that the bearded dragon was there and the iguana wasn't there, but
because you could imagine, it's not like Val Kilmer was much of a character in this, but you can imagine because he is kind of an ass in it.
Yeah,
him going, well, obviously that's a bearded. What is a bearded dragon?
It's apparently a bearded dragon.
Okay, yeah. So that's a bearded dragon and that's a Komodo. Like, there's no.
But iguana. It's revealed later that Val Kilmer knows what Nicolas Cage is up to. With like he likes to get high, so he might just be like, okay, well, he's just high. You know,
yeah, I suppose like, so.
Just don't screw this up for us.
But the reason I bring this iguana scene is they randomly release me, and they do like a loving shot, like from side of the iguana's perspective at Nicolas Cage and Val Kilmer and the other guys just standing there.
Yeah, same thing where it cuts this weird like HD camera just really close up on the iguana, and in fact another shot of the other one, which I think is the bearded lizard, like biting at the camera. And Nicolas Cage just kind of side-eyeing it in the distance. It's very bizarre, but I love it so much because it's just him having like just high as hell, having this flight of fancy while some actual crime is going on. And then becoming super cop. They have the suspect, Santa surrounded, and Nicolas Cage gets this great idea to go through the apartment next door, kind of weasels his way in, and then goes around the back and gets, I believe it's Midget, if not G, and sneaks up on him, gets the drop on him, makes that guy give up. And it, like when he brings him out, he's all like, I love it. I just love it. Like being a cop, I guess. He's kind of bragging, spiking the ball a little bit about his job. And then later they make another run on the other associate whose baby mama is like, well, he's hiding in the armoire. And Nicolas Cage goes in with him and rolls up a blunt and smokes a blunt with him and gives this weird speech about being propelled by a simple sense of purpose. I just like that whole speech about like the simple sense of purpose. My whole purpose is to find out who killed these kids. Mm. And I'm here investigating Big Fate doing it because you're not telling me that Big Fate did it. I know that Big Fate, it's this weird circular logic that he's just rolling out that all sounds like, that tracks. It absolutely doesn't, but he's just strung out like hell. So it works for him.
Yeah. There's a few of those that I quite like
later
when he goes, we'll get to it, but when he goes completely over the top later, there's a lot of that.
And then just on the subject of his, Nicolas Cage's over-the-topness. It is. It's not Vampire's Kiss, Nicolas Cage, but it's out there. Like, he gets weird in this movie.
Yeah.
But it's almost like this refined European weirdness, where it still feels sort of like reined in a little bit, but it's still bonkers.
Early it is. Yeah. And not even early, because this movie is weirdly set up. But the first half of the movie, you're right.
Yeah.
And then when he kind of, like, basically, I guess kind of the last third is where he goes completely over the top and he's full Nick Cage.
Like when he loses the kid, I think at that point.
That's what I mean. Yeah. And then when he hangs out with Exhibit, that whole sequence is just beautiful. Nicolas Cage being Nicolas Cage.
Yeah.
So, they get the guy in the armoire and he goes back to the cop shop. And who's there but Exhibit himself with his lawyer going like, hey, you've been looking for me? Which I thought, baller move.
Yep.
And they meet up with the DA, who has the greatest last name ever. I don't know if you caught that.
Oh, I did, and I didn't write it
down. His name is D.A. Jeremiah Goodhusband.
Yes.
Which, I mean, I'm sure that's an actual last name, but I was tickled.
It made me think of that, like, African leader, Good Luck Jonathan. It's like, that's a crazy last name.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
So they're still trying to gather evidence, but basically that right now the investigation sort of stopped short. And he goes back to Frankie's hotel room to find that she's been roughed up by one of her clients. And I love this guy. This actor, Shay Whigham, I think is how you say his name. He was the brother in Boardwalk Empire, Steve Buscemi's brother in Boardwalk Empire. He was the preacher in True Detective.
Oh, shit.
The revival preacher.
Oh, motherfucker.
He has a bit part. He's together. In one of the Fast Furious guys. But I love this actor. He's so great. And he is hilarious in this. She's apparently been roughed up by this guy. Then this guy just tries to shake him down, takes 10 grand from him. And the whole time he's like, the guy's like not backing down about like what he's going to do. And this kid just shouting at him. He's like, oh yeah, huh, oh. And still just flexing nuts. He's like, you're going to regret this. Leaves. And there's someone waiting in the hall. I think it's the kid is waiting in the hall. The delivery boy. Because he's going to be, because the DA has tasked Nicolas Cage with watching this kid.
Yeah. So what he does is drive to Biloxi to pick up his hooker girlfriend.
Yeah. And so when they're there, that's when he finds out that this guy's been roughing her up. And as Shay Whigham leaves, he just like walks over to the kid and goes, oh yeah. And then just leaves. And he does that every time you see him since, which I think is only once or twice, but he's always just like, oh yeah.
Yeah.
And it's comically ridiculous, but not so over the top. Like, Shay does a good job of sort of like reining it in a little bit, but it is still just insane.
It seemed like somebody in Boogie Nights where it's like, I could see how you ended up this way. And it's not, it's over the top, but it's not, it's like, it's believable as a real human, just a human that just things have not gone right. I also like, so in that scene where, Nicolas Cage is fighting back against him, and he goes, I don't care that your father knows some giddy hood. You don't hit a woman.
Yeah.
I just love that your father knows some giddy hood. It's such a fucking, like, I don't know. It's just, that's not a phrase you hear in a movie made in the 2000s.
Yeah. Like, no, absolutely. So they take this because he's got Frankie. He gets Frankie, and then they take the kid to, he takes the kid to Biloxi, meets up with Frankie, and then they go to a casino, and he loses the kid. The kid just like bails on him because he's afraid of what's going to happen. He's also seen Nicolas Cage do coke, so he's not stoked on it.
Yeah, well, Nicolas Cage leaves the kid with Frankie because he wants to go check the scores of the game that he had bet on.
Which is great because he's just talking to some guy at the bar about the game, and the team he's bet on is losing. And he's like, what is this about? That's terrible. And the guy's like, do you want to know my top picks? And he's like, the fuck I want? Do I look like I want to hear about your top picks? And he just walks off.
Yeah. But so Daryl's gone, runs away, and there's a chase sequence trying to find him. They don't. He ends up going back and threatening grandmas again.
Well, before getting to threatening grandmas, like that whole like looking for him was really the tension of it was interesting because it was very long and drawn out. It wasn't this just like frantic search. He's frantically searching, but it's like, okay, now we're going to follow him over here and he's going to look in this room and it's not there. And we're going to hang out in this room a little bit to show you how empty it is. And now we're going to move on to this room.
Oh, you're right. Yeah. They kind of follow the car in the spotlight instead of.
Not just like, boom, boom. Oh my gosh. Oh boy, this is all super bad. It's more just like, okay, yeah, this is another thing that's happening, which for him, I think makes a lot of sense that this is the sort of like flattened effect for everything. He's like, oh great. Now I got to do this. And I just want to get these drugs.
Yeah, I just love the fact that like it's one of these things where we're now taking it as natural that he's in a car with his hooker girlfriend, and he just lost a material witness in a case that he's working on out of another state that he just drove him to. Like it's a weird thing where you're following a character so closely that you have to take a step back and go, whoa, where the fuck are we right now? We're in another state with a hooker, and you just lost your witness.
Well, and then so they're driving around, and he's just got his floodlight out of the cop car. And you just see this spotlight just going across dilapidated buildings and hookers. And it was a very sort of David Lynch feeling thing. Because the hookers would say stuff like, you know, looking for a party, big boy, and then trail off in the distance. And it was really just otherworldly kind of thing almost. And kind of weirdly creepy. Not just that he can't find the kid and this is going to be bad, but just this kid is just lost in this creepy.
Yeah. No, that's world. Like that almost, that sequence is almost like the opening of a better movie. Like,
right, yeah, okay. Yeah.
But I did skip a bit because I just was so excited to get to what I think is one of the best scenes in this film and one of the best scenes in any film is him threatening the two grandmas again.
Yeah. So, and you get the shot of the palatial old folks home that the kid's grandma and her charge live at. And the old woman in the wheelchair being taken care of has oxygen hose going into her nose, and it's in a wheelchair, and she wheels her into this room, and the door shuts behind them, and there's Nicolas Cage hiding behind the door, shaving in the most threatening manner I've ever seen with an electric razor, just like, and just glowering at them. And it's like, where's the boy?
Yeah.
It's some Pete Cage.
And she's not saying shit until he pulls the air pipe out of the old lady's nose and crimps it.
Yep.
And then doesn't even look at the old lady's pulling out. Doesn't look at her. Looks over her head at Daryl's grandmother. And he's like, where's Daryl? Where's Daryl? Where? And just, he's choking an old woman to death by keeping her oxygen from her, yeah. Not even looking at her. And then when she finally goes, oh, he's on a plane to England, he kind of gently puts it back in her nose. It doesn't quite work. He reseats it, like, oh, it's okay, darling. It is this really weird, like, soft moment. And then pull back, starts screaming at them for living too long. And he says, you're the fucking reason this country's going down the fucking drain.
Yeah.
Because they're old and haven't died yet.
Yeah. And he says, like, he's had an hour and a half sleep in the last, like, 3 days. Yeah. And I really like this because there is sort of, this movie has the feeling of, like I said, the just sort of, it was originally sort of a straight cop story. And this movie came out around the time, particularly like The Shield was on and all stuff. And even now we have all these shows about these amoral gray anti-heroes. And Nicolas Cage's character, Terrence McDonough, is that. But there's very little redeemable about him, particularly at this point of the movie. Like, there's not just like, well, but it's for the greater good. I mean, eventually he does some good. This guy just sucks so much.
And the good that he does, and this is one of the things I kind of overall question of the movie is, and for me, I don't think there is an arc, is I don't think he did the greater good. So at one point, he, in a coke state, either pretends to or admits that he didn't give a fuck about that family that got shot.
Mm.
And I think that's real, though. I don't think he ever cared. I think the only reason he caught Exhibit, and sorry, we're jumping a bit here, but like, yeah, is he just wanted the drugs. That's the only reason he was there. He wasn't trying to do his job. He needed drugs and money.
Yeah.
That was the only way to get to it. This wasn't an elaborate sting of him doing it his own way. He just needed access to drugs and money.
Yeah. He just needed to be able to continue to do what he's doing.
Yeah. And then went, oh, cool, I can catch this guy too. And that'll get me, you know, like he's not likable. And then even his redemption moments aren't, I don't know that they're redemption at all. I think it's just kind of, I happen to be over here. I might as well do my job a little bit.
Yeah. But then it all starts collapsing because, so he gets in trouble with Brad Dourif for not being able to pay his loss because his whatever he bet on lost. And Brad Dourif comes to the police station he's working at to yell at him about it, which I thought was, well, that's pretty weird. But then also, I don't know, it's post-Katrina. Everything's terrible.
Yeah, I like that other cop, the one that isn't Val Kilmer.
Yeah.
That's at the desk next to him, and he's just trying his best to not look at this because he's like, oh my God, this is a fucking dude. You're literally having your bookie yell at you.
Yeah. We need all the hands we can get right now. Yeah.
I love that guy's exasperation.
Yeah, that whole subtle thing running through it of just like, okay, this is all terrible. This is corrupt as hell, but like, we need you. We need this person here. Yeah. Not that you're this amazing cop, but we just need the hands. So he owes money. And then the guy, Shea Whigham, that he shook down earlier, has some connections to a gangster. The gangster shows up at Frankie's place and it's like, you owe us 50 grand now. You took 10 grand, now it's 50 grand. And I really like that character. I love that whole weird moment where he goes to Frankie's house and there's the head mob guy who's got Ava Mendez on his lap and then the two like heavy guys. They just introduce themselves like, I'm Dave, this is Jeff.
Oh yeah, totally, yeah.
It's just the whole scene is played out so weird. And then Nicolas Cage seemingly is just throwing his girlfriend to the wolves in that, because he's fine with her being a prostitute. And they like, not only do we want the money, we want to have our way with her. And he's like, okay, like, just here's the thing though. You guys let her get cleaned up and you guys got to finish in 15 minutes. And you're like, oh my God, that's terrible. But then it's just revealed that there was sort of a stalling tactic to, you know, they'd be like, well, we couldn't possibly in 15 minutes. We'll be back later. But I'm not entirely sure it was a stalling tactic, but the movie kind of plays it off like, no, he knew all along. I feel like he could have gone either way there.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of lean towards it was a stalling tactic because it does seem like he actually cares a little bit about this woman.
Yes.
So, I mean, not that that's a redeeming trait because, again, I just can't stress enough. Boy, this guy, not a lot to like. And so he's in trouble. You know, she's in trouble with gangsters. He's in trouble with the internal affairs at this point that he takes Frankie to his dad's house with the stepmom and the stepmom and her don't get along. And the internal affairs shows up, takes his gun.
Yeah. Well, he's already gotten in trouble. He's already been questioned about terrorizing the old woman and has denied it. But then 1-2 punch of Shea Whigham is that he's also, his dad's connected, and they're like, no, no, no. His dad is flexing nuts and is getting your badge pulled from some assault complaint against his son. So all the stuff is coming down. His whole life just immediately crumbling around him.
Yeah, this is when the pirate story happens, where Nicolas Cage takes Frankie to this little shed they have on the property, and he gives a story about how he found his mother bought him a metal detector, and he found this silver spoon under a tree, and he thought it was his pirate treasure, and her acting is just so fucking terrible.
See, yeah,
and but here's part of that scene that, so they show the spoon and it's like, it's all rusty or whatever. Is that supposed to be a heroin spoon?
Sure. You could argue that.
Cause he says it's all rusty, but the way they show it is it's like that bubbly bit in the middle of, I don't know what real heroin spoons look like, yeah. But in movies when they show heroin spoons, that's where the gross part was. So like, is this a reference to like, was his mom a heroin addict? Was that, cause they don't really explain what happened to her.
No, I just took it as that it was this thing from his childhood that was once good and pure is not now, but he still cares for it. And him giving it to her later is like, I'm the spoon. Like, I'm this damaged, weird thing, but please love it.
Oh, it's like the Matrix. I get it.
Yeah. And he knows Kung Fu. I thought that was a weirdly sweet moment for this movie. And not in a way that I didn't feel like it was shoehorned in. I felt it was this sort of like genuine, like he genuinely cares about this person, this Frankie. And that's kind of all he has right now. And he saw us like his dad or whatever, even though they kind of, they're not estranged, but they don't have a great relationship. But it was this nice human moment in the midst of his being awful actually coming back to haunt him.
Yeah. It's just her acting distracted me. You're right. Yeah. I mean, it is kind of a nice scene. It's her acting and also Nicolas Cage's acting where it's kind of antithetical to like a sweet moment because it's on the verge of, you know.
And that's something that I love so much about this movie is that, you know, you've talked before about like watching movies and it seems like everything is just one shade off. And this is 100% that. And this should be just a straight crime, you know, just by the numbers detective story. But between Herzog and Cage,
yeah,
it's just so different enough that even though there are times I'm not necessarily enjoying it, I'm still 100% captivated by whatever's going on.
See, this one, I completely agree with what you're saying, but like this one doesn't scream, oh, this is like one shade off or this is that like this movie makes one small choice different. Since it's a Werner Herzog movie, I completely expect that because he's a fucking weirdo. So yeah. Like, at least like this one is not as like shocking when the movie goes weird because it's fucking Werner Herzog. Like right. He is a strange, strange man. Yeah. So this is a roundabout where he talks to Exhibit.
Yeah.
And he convinces them to kind of go into business with them by saying, look, I'll feed you police information so you know when the drugs are coming into town, where they're being monitored or whatever. Mm-hmm. All I want is, you know, 10% of the cut or whatever.
Yeah, I need $15,000 per delivery.
Yeah.
Just because he's so far in the hole right now.
Yeah, and yeah, Exhibit's like, yeah, cool. So he's like, hey, I'll give you like a one of good faith. He finds out when a delivery was going to be monitored. He tells Exhibit, things are great. Exhibit's like, fuck yeah, I like you. Let's do this. And they have a really awkward talk about how they're going to buy condos.
Yeah.
While they're throwing a body out of the back of his car.
Yeah, it's great because they're just talking and behind them, Exhibit's two lackeys are throwing a body over. Yeah, and he's like, I'm going to invest in real estate and then you can be the face of this because you're respectable, but I'll be the power behind the throne. He's like, yeah, that sounds like a great idea.
But also I notice here, and this is, again, should be this, but I think Exhibit might be the best actor in this movie. Because he did a good job, and I just, with everybody else, it's just so awkward and weird. It's just like, oh, he's just giving a grounded performance, like a real human would talk. I was like, yeah. Oh, thank you.
I will agree that's like most grounded, but I love Nicolas Cage in this, and like I said, I love Shea Whigham in this.
It's a person.
It's a real person.
Yeah, I understand you.
Because his immediate captain, I think it's because his boss, Vondie Curtis Hall, who I always enjoy. He was the...
Oh, totally.
Yeah, he was the reporter in Daredevil. But like, even he's kind of ridiculous. At the very beginning, he's fine and just like acting, but I think he gets kind of more and more ridiculous and we'll get to the sort of final scene with him. But yeah, Exhibit is the most like, yeah, I'm in a movie. What are you guys doing?
Yeah.
Character in this whole movie.
I never thought I'd be so like refreshed by an Exhibit performer. Yes. I was like, oh, this is great. So this is roundabout where he finds the footballer who I don't know his name, but that he catches him with marijuana. Nicolas Cage convinces this guy to do poorly in the football game so he can bet against them, which was a weird. I mean, this whole, again, the betting thing is just super weird to me. Yeah. I don't really understand.
It's just his spiral into degeneracy and desperation of just like, I need this money and I'm just going to do any way I can, by hook or by crook.
Yeah, this is where his drug use starts going. This is where full Nicolas Cage comes out.
It's so good.
And I don't know which of the various horrible scenes it is, but I think it's him smoking with Exhibit, and he just goes, to the break of dawn, baby, to the break of dawn.
Oh, it's when it's after they do the first delivery thing, and he puts a gun on Exhibit and is like, "Where's my money? Give me my money. I will kill all of you." To the break of dawn, and then starts laughing. They're all like, "Yeah, okay, you pulled a gun on us, but this is fine."
Amazing.
But it's then he later when they get the big shipment or whatever, they're all hanging out at Exhibit's place, and he loses his mind, and it is beautiful.
And he's quoting. I think he's trying to quote rap lyrics at some point. Like it is. I mean, it's beautiful.
Well, he starts telling some story about watching a football game, and a guy leaping over his like a tackler, the defense, and he just sprouts horns. And he sprouts horns like an elk. And he's laughing and I'm like, "You are on crack. Like, we're also on crack.
Yeah.
But you are insane and on crack."
It is fantastic.
It's so good.
He makes like an Ice Cube reference. Yeah, like it sounds like he's trying.
He says something about being easy. But I'm not easy.
That was it.
Yeah, and everyone is like, "Oh God!" It's like talking to someone who's drunk, and you're like, "Okay, that's great."
It was just. It's just so amazing that like it's just the choice of Nicolas Cage trying to go like this straight white detective dude trying to like be street by going, "Oh, I knew a rapper's name 20 years ago." Oh God, that if anybody listening has not seen this movie, one, just kind of fast forward to see anytime he does drugs and watch that scene. But this scene is so good.
Well, and what's also happening is that scene starts with an establishing of because they're all testing out the heroin and then smoking crack. And you can see underneath Exhibit's desk, Big Fate's desk, is a shotgun. Like he's got like wired up under the desk. And then Nicolas Cage wants part of the drugs he's like, "Give me a cut of the drugs for, instead of me being paid all the way, pay me some of the way, and then I'll take some of my money in drugs." And then at that moment, then they start smoking crack together. Exhibit already has a crack pipe. But then Nicolas Cage is like, "This is my lucky crack pipe." And it's a crack pipe from before. They took off that lady. He gets high off of it. He has Exhibit get high off of it. And then lo and behold, who comes in but those gangster thugs from earlier.
Yeah, the sleazy Goombas or whatever you call them.
Because he's taken, at this point, he's taken Frankie to his dad's house to lay low. And they were able to track him down or been following him and follow him to Big Fate's place. And I like, because he's like, "No, I got this." And then he's just going to offer his cut to the gangster. And I was like, this would cover what I owe plus some because it's worth that much. And the guy's like, "Why don't I just take everything?" I like his whole speech of like, "I never got rich being a gangster. I'm old now, so I'm not leaving anything behind.
I never made enough to get to retire.
I'm stuck doing this." Yeah. And so he's like, "I'm just going to take all the drugs." And so Exhibit blows him away with a shotgun.
Before he blows him away, Exhibit gives a great thing. He's like, "Well, why would you take from me?" Like, he has this really reasonable response of like, "What do I have to do with any of this? Why would you take my stuff from?" And it's, again, I love the response because like, he's the only grounded, normal human in this movie. But yeah, so then he blows him away with the shotgun.
And then they shoot down the other two guys with the mobster. And then Nicolas Cage says, "Shoot him again." And G says, "Why?" His soul is still dancing. Is that the line?
His soul is still dancing.
His soul is still dancing.
They show the iguana, and then they show his soul dancing until they shoot him again.
Yeah.
And then his soul falls down.
His soul looks nothing like him. Nope. Has a mohawk. Yeah. And it's just like some weird, like jazzy kind of stuff starts playing. And this guy is just breakdancing in slow motion.
Breakdancing.
And Nicolas Cage is just standing there watching him smiling. And it is amazing.
Yes.
It's so great.
This is the movie I wanted, because this is where it's full Nicolas Cage. We go back to the cop shop, and he goes, "Hey, you know, I bet if you looked into that house again and looked under the bed, you might find, I don't know, like a crack pipe or something that we missed the first time. We went, wink, you know, get some DNA, deoxyribonucleic acid. It's like,
yeah.
What the fuck are you doing, Nicolas Cage? It was amazing. Yeah, yeah, so he has hid that crack pipe, which, not to poke holes at this movie because it's airtight so far. His DNA would be on that crack pipe just as much as exhibits.
You would think, but they're probably not testing for his. Multiple people have used it. They're like, oh, I wonder if Big Fates is on this. And they may have Big Fates DNA for some. Yeah,
fair enough.
That's how I explain it to myself. Because, yeah, same thing. I'm like, wouldn't his be on there too? Maybe he's not a secretor. Maybe his DNA doesn't come forward that way. I just read a true crime novel.
Yeah, I was about to say, too much true crime.
After this, Nicolas Cage goes back home to try to find Frankie. And Frankie is her she's at a meeting. She went into rehab. His dad had taken her to an AA meeting, and now she's in rehab. And it's just him and Jennifer Coolidge as his stepmom. She is just blasted on beer, and he's high as hell. And they're just being miserable together. And he finds out on TV that not only is his team not covering the spread, but the guy he's shaking down to do that isn't even in the game. He's taking the sidelines. So he's at work, and this might be my favorite scene in the whole movie, honestly. He's at his desk, kind of strung out, and then Brad Dourif shows up. He's like, "What are you doing here? I'm sorry, I don't have your money. I'm sorry, they lost." He's like, "Did you not finish watching the game? Here's a package full of money." And then immediately following that, someone else comes up.
But that's one of the best scenes of other guy, the other cop.
Yeah,
just kind of like his hands like on his face, basically just going like, "Seriously, you're doing it? Like you're chirping 50,000? Oh, this is fucking ridiculous." I love that guy. That other actor is just like, "Oh, this is just
quietly just doing great." I forget, someone else comes up and says something to him. Then Bonnie Curtis Hall shows up.
It's like, twitchy guy from that's got the Italian mob shows up.
Oh, yeah. He's sitting at, Shea Whittingham is sitting at his desk, and it's just like, I don't know, those guys disappeared. I don't know if that's something you had to do with it, but we're cool.
Yeah, not between us. We're cool. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And he says, oh, yeah, a whole bunch of times.
Kool-Aid bans the fuck out.
And it only gets funnier and funnier.
Yeah.
So he takes off. So that's settled. And then Brad Dourif shows up and has the money. And then immediately Bonnie Curtis Hall shows up and is like, oh, we got his DNA off the crack pipe. So just all his problems are solved.
Instantly.
Just boom, 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 boom. And it's so hilarious that's the way it goes down. They're just dump it all right there.
Yeah.
And like knowingly, there's like this whole thing is kind of tongue in cheek, it feels like.
And then there's this awkward scene where they go to arrest Exhibit. And Exhibit, again, is going, what the fuck, dude? We just made a deal. And Val Kilmer, Stevie, mm-hmm. really wants to shoot Exhibit. He's like, no, what we're going to have him do is go for the gun and we can shoot him. And it's this weird thing because, like, nowhere else, like, why this late in the movie have him be the I want to murder suspects guy? Like,
well, because I think it needed a way to let Nicolas Cage off the hook to a degree because, Big Fate's going to be like, we had a deal. What's going on? And so to have Val Kilmer be like, look, I know this guy just gets high because he says that. He's like, he's a good guy. He just likes to get high. And then I'm going to try to kill him. I'm trying to set up to kill him. So now Val Kilmer knows that Nicolas Cage has that on him. So he's going to back up Nicolas Cage to being like, there's no way I had a deal with him. You know what I mean? I feel like it was sort of double cross blackmail with a twist.
Because it was just a weird thing for that late in the film. And so everything works out great. And we're cut to 1 year later.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out he gets a promotion. He's now a bad whatever comes after lieutenant.
Captain.
Bad captain. And bad captain protocol hooker womb. Because it turns out Frankie is Preggers.
Yeah.
And we're going to assume it's his child.
Yep.
And they're all at the table and they're all drinking sparkling water.
Yeah. It seems like everyone has cleaned up.
Everybody's cleaned up until the next scene.
Uh-huh.
Guys, he's outside the gator's nest again.
Back at the gator club.
He go catch him some of that gator.
Woo!
And you know that gator? That's a pretty lady and a guy because he's going to shake him down.
Exact same scene.
Yeah, exact same scene. He doesn't fuck her this time. Or maybe he does. I don't know if we show that entire thing.
Yeah, fades out before that happens.
And then we cut to him and he's in a hotel for hotel reasons. Doing a large amount of heroin. And you know who walks in? The guy he saved in the first scene.
Yeah.
Because that's not a narrative convenience at all.
Nope.
And
it's kismet.
The guy in the first scene goes, oh, shit, I know you. You saved my life. Do you remember me? And he's like, yeah, I remember you. Which is kind of almost like good guy of him, because I mean, he's strung out on drugs, and this entire, like, his downfall started by saving this guy.
Yeah.
Like, that's the reason his back hurt. That's the reason he started doing drugs. And he's just kind of like, yeah, what's up, bro? And he's like, you know what we should do? Let's go to the aquarium.
No, that's not. He just says, he doesn't offer to take him to the aquarium. He's just like, he sees that, like, he's doing a whole bunch of drugs. And he's like, I've been clean for a year. And he sits down with him and he's like, basically like, I can help you out. Like, we can get you fixed up. And Nicolas Cage just looks up at him and goes, do you think fish dream?
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And then it just cuts to them sitting at an aquarium.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
And it's this beautiful shot. It's just this glass wall with fish behind them, but they're just both sitting there on the floor, just staring kind of past the camera. And then it just gets a little bit closer to them. And Nicolas Cage is like, you know, I'm still not happy I ruined my underwear for you. And then the guy has like, yeah. And then they just sit there for a while. Nicolas Cage kind of gradually starts smiling. And then the movie ends.
Yeah.
And I love it. It's so great.
Yeah.
We're like, just going through the movie just doesn't do it justice. Like, it's so weird. And it's not necessarily an easy watch, because it is a long movie. It is, like I said, in particular, that first hour is like, yeah, okay. Yeah. He's a bad lieutenant.
I would recommend taking a break. Like, if I had more time, because I watched it last night, like, I wish I had watched it earlier in the week so I could, because about halfway through, I'm like, boy, I would like to be somewhere else just for a little bit and then come back to this, because it needs an intermission or something, because it's a long fucking 2 hours.
But it's like I said, like, I want, we are in, and I may have talked this on previous episodes. There's this author, sociologist, maybe this guy, Mark Fisher, that wrote this essay about the slow death of the future, in basically that, because of, I think he basically blames it all on capitalism, but it's basically just that we're stopping to make new things because we want to make sure things. Like, we know this makes money, so let's make another Marvel movie. Let's make a remake of this movie that was popular. Like, let's stop it. So we're gradually stopping to make new things. If that's true, and I believe to some extent that it is, if we keep doing that, let's do this. Let's have the next Marvel movie be made by Takeshi Miike or something. You know what I mean? Like, let's just get weird with it. Because this took an already bizarre sort of cult classic movie and just made it weirder in a whole different way. And I love that. That's way more exciting to me than just like, oh, this guy that made this super awesome movie over here, we're going to make him make this formulaic superhero movie here. Now he's successful. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
that's a really good point. Yeah.
Yeah. And I would just love, like, this is just springing to mind. Back in the early Nintendo days, I think bringing up Miike made me think of it. There's this Japanese director I really like, Takeshi Kitano. He made a video game, and it starts with a text block that says, this is a video game by a man that hates video games. And it's this super bizarre, punishing, awful game. But I like that that exists, because I think it's awesome to have someone that's like maybe antithetical to what you're trying to do it. Like, oh, we're going to have Werner Herzog make a procedural cop movie. Hell yes, yeah. That sounds amazing. And it is for what it is. It's not the easiest watch, but it's great. And so more of this is what I demand.
Yeah, I'm into it. I want to see so many more. I would like to have Uwe Boll should remake Kubrick movies. Like, let's just fucking do it.
Whatever.
Yeah. Like, I'm just like, let's combine the worst and the best and just see what happens. Because if you're gonna start remaking stuff, why try doing it? I don't want to say well, but why try doing it? Like, it's not like they're remaking things that suck the first time. They're remaking, you know, movies that did well the first time or were classics in some way.
Yeah.
So why not just do it in a really strange, awkward way?
Well, and I, to be fair, I haven't seen this, but it's sort of the reverse RoboCop. Because it seems like Paul Verhoeven's RoboCop is this whole satirical, beyond just being a straight like action movie, it's like satirical in a lot of ways. And it seemed like when they remade it, it just went, no, but he's a robot, the cop that shoots people. And instead of it, like, we do that, we go the other way with it, I think, too often. And this was a refreshing that, no, we're going to take a sort of, we're going to get weird with it. So it's sort of like having the guy who did The Lobster and Killing of a Sacred Deer. Let's have him do Top Gun. Like that. Yeah. I would hate that movie because I don't like that guy, but man, I want to see that movie so bad.
That would be fun. Or like, have like Lars von Trier direct the next Transformers.
Yes. Oh my God. Yeah, absolutely. Like, that's just get weird with it. I think that'd be great. So, if there's some way to like kind of have not a public domain, but just like, look, we are Sony. We have a gajillion dollars. Here's just a tub of properties.
Yeah.
That, like, there's no way you can, like, idiots are going to go see this regardless of what we do. So go, Lars von Trier, here's Bumblebee.
Yeah. It, like, Terrence Malick, like, does a remake of, you know, Faster Pussycat Kill Go Kill or something. You know, just.
David Lynch's G.I. Joe Retaliation.
Yeah. I would watch that so fucking quickly.
Yeah.
It's not even, David Lynch, any movie, like, just give David Lynch. Here's $120 million to make whatever movie you want to make.
Yeah.
But it's got to have special effects and explosions. Just be like, just watch what happens.
I mean, because say what you will about Dune. Like, Dune is a singular vision. As weird as it is, and like as problems that it has, like, there's some amazing stuff in there that you would not necessarily see in sci-fi movies, particularly of that time. So, yeah, do that, Hollywood. I know you're all listening.
All right. So that was Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
And, I can't help but notice that it's one more month of Halloween. One more month of Halloween. One more month of Halloween. Silver Shamrock.
That's right.
Well, that's the remember it from Halloween 3 Season of the Witch where they've got that weird countdown music cartoon?
Yeah.
And they're like, three more days till Halloween. Silver Shamrock.
Yeah, it's a great song.
It is.
Anthem of a Generation.
We should probably watch that movie since I just brought that up.
Yes, Halloween 3 Season of the Witch.
Yes, not to be confused with that weird song from the 70s.
Or the Nicolas Cage movie, Season of the Witch.
You can confuse us, that's fine.
Oh, okay.
I'm sure they're interchangeable.
Yes.
Yeah, so yes, it's the Halloween movie that has nothing to do with...
Michael Myers.
Yeah. Inexplicably, I think it has something to do with pieces of
well, Stonehenge. Should, spoiler alert.
And hats.
And druids.
Yeah. Is that it? I haven't seen. I saw this movie, I'm going to say, in 1998. So I have like a very faint remembrance of it, other than that song every now and again will get stuck in my head.
Yeah. It's very catchy. And yeah, this was the first non. Because initially Halloween was imagined as going to be just a whole bunch of vignettes. All the movies were going to be different themes, but then people really like Michael Myers and they stuck with it. And this is the first one that they didn't do that with. And it was really critically panned, but then several years ago, some online weirdos are like, no, it's actually good if you think about it. So we'll see whether or not that's true.
Yeah. Spoiler alert. No, it might be, I don't know, I haven't seen it in fucking forever, but generally when the internet tries to resurrect something, it's usually garbage on toast.
Yep.
Yeah, so that's it. That's going to start our horror month that's going to consist of probably two, maybe three.
Maybe three, yeah.
Woo!
Breakneck pace that this comes out
scary.
At.
Scary. Okay, anyway, yeah, so that's it. If you're listening, remember to rate, review, subscribe, do things to support the show, share on Facebook. That would be really great because that's the only way anybody's ever going to hear about this show.
Yeah, so please do.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye.